This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Let's get a quick Paris review from Lindsay Allen, the Executive Director of the Rainforest Action Network, or RAN. Lindsay, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. It's good to be back.
Well, okay. Let's start with the positives in the Paris Agreement. What good was done there?
I mean, it's a big deal anytime you have 195 countries come to consensus on anything. So I think that's one of the big positive takeaways from Paris. If you read the text that's now available that goes through the details of the Paris talks, it does have mention, and I would even say placeholders, for a lot of the critical components of what we wanted to see in the Paris deal. One of the pieces that is really critical to put in perspective is that 195 teams of diplomats did not come together and just sign on to a consensus agreement around dealing with the threat of climate change because they're good people or because their governments are progressive or anything else. We're seeing this action on behalf of governments from all around the world as a result of people-powered campaigns that are being driven by communities that are feeling climate impacts touching down on them every single day. And so that is what we really see as the takeaway message, is that our movement continues to gain momentum, and the role of diplomats in the Paris talks was one example of us starting to show our strength. But it also means that we need to double down and make sure that, A, the commitments that were brought in the Paris Agreement to the Paris talks are really followed through on. And it's critical that we drive far beyond, because as I'm sure you're about to ask, there are a lot of failings of the Paris Agreement.
I do want to get to that, but one other positive I see is that they finally stopped talking about 2 degrees C as something safe and proclaimed by God or something, and mentioned that 1.5 degrees might be more reasonable. What do you think about that?
Yes. So they didn't actually completely stop talking about 2 degrees, but they did really open the door for a 1.5 degree conversation. And as we all know, the difference between stabilizing the catastrophic climate change closer to 1.5 versus 2 is really critical, because it's talking about if we stabilize closer to 1.5, we hope to avoid, based on climate modeling, many of the worst negative feedback loops, which means where we start to get this tipping point, something bad happens, like the Arctic ice sheet starts melting, and then methane, for instance, is released into the atmosphere, and that's a greenhouse gas about 20 times more potent than carbon. So that it is critical to have a 1.5 conversation. It's important to note that 1.5 is not the only marker in the text. So 2 degrees is still in the text. In most of the language, it still refers to 2, although it leaves this qualifier that does say we need to get closer to 1.5. And the reality is the emission reduction commitments that countries brought and that are kind of available as some of the annexes to the agreement don't get us anywhere near 2, let alone 1.5. So that's still a tremendous gap that we're seeing. But you're right that 1.5 is a critical part of the conversation we need to be having.
Okay, so what are some of the other failings of that climate agreement in Paris in December 2015?
So where to start? There, a couple of key points. One is we know that indigenous rights was not included in binding ways in the agreement. And in general, the agreement does not have as much teeth compared to the sentiment or the placeholder language that's there. So the exclusion of indigenous rights is really critical when we think about, for instance, tropical forests, which is one of the places where we really focus our work. We know that the best way to protect tropical forests is to recognize the solutions that are being driven by indigenous communities. And that's the reason why we really still have intact tropical forests. So indigenous rights is not recognized as a core element of what the solution to addressing catastrophic climate change is. That's a big failing. We also know there are huge questions that still remain around who pays and who is responsible for the emissions that have already been released into the atmosphere. So we know that developed nations have emitted the majority of emissions that have put us into the kind of dire situation that we're currently in. And so there's a fair share question. Are these countries, these developed nations, really willing to pay their fair share? And there's nothing in the text that says we will, as developed nations, pay disproportionately more to ensure the developing nations that want to follow through on their national commitments to emission reductions actually have the resources to do so. So that's still a key piece in there. It's related to another element of the conversation that folks might have heard about, which is really around this loss and damage conversation. So imagine the small island nations having to deal with sea level rise, or developing nations like the Philippines, for instance, having to deal with an increased frequency and severity of massive weather events. Who is responsible and who helps to compensate for the losses that are being felt by countries that are most heavily impacted by climate change, which are often the least resourced nations? So the loss and damage section of the talks does not explicitly say this is how compensation, in a sense, is going to be paid and how we're going to take accountability for the losses that these countries are facing. And the U.S. was one of the key stakeholders in arguing to kind of keep some of the stronger elements of the policy out of the text because, for instance, it could have been argued that this would be a mechanism for holding major emitting industries, and specifically corporations, often U.S.-based corporations, responsible for global emissions. So that's really a gap. And then there was an element that's a little bit of a mixed bag, which is around forests. Forests are really included in a strong way in the deal in terms of recognizing ecosystem value. A lot of folks fought hard to get in that text so that forests aren't just considered these kind of landscapes that have a number of carbon sticks that we need to protect just purely because of the carbon equation. The challenge is that the mechanism that is likely to be used to protect forests is a market-based mechanism. And this kind of takes us back to one of the bigger picture points, and it's not a surprise that coming out of the Paris talk, there are so many vested interests that are really committed to trying to only do as much as required. And so this sense of we don't really want to change business as usual. We want to kind of get this monkey off our back, so let's see what the least we can do is. That is not the level of ambition that we need to be seeing from President Obama or any of the other leaders that were there for the climate talks. What we need to be seeing is a drastic shift away from a carbonized economy. We need to be keeping fossil fuels in the ground. We need to be keeping forests standing, and we need to be learning to take leadership from communities that are at the forefront of feeling the impacts of climate change and have been developing solutions but do not have the same level of access and power and resources to kind of make these top-down plays that we sometimes see from diplomats proposing these types of things. So that's really our opportunity coming out of the talks, is to say, it was great. We all came to agreement in Paris. There are some beautiful words on paper, and there's some placeholders for real action. But as each of us returns to all of our different nations all around the world, the momentum that got our leaders into the position to come to consensus in Paris needs to be the momentum that we use to continue to leverage much deeper changes to business as usual, to our entire kind of carbonized economy, so that we see solutions that are commensurate with the scale of the challenges we face with climate change.
Wow. Well, it took, you know, more than 20 years of these COP meetings for these diplomats to come to the point to recognize that global warming is serious and eventually we'll have to get out of the carbon age, and that eventually extends past 2050 as far as I can figure out. Lindsay Allen, as we wrap up, I wish you could tell us a couple of stories from Paris of the action outside the official negotiations. Did the voice of the people get a chance despite fears of terrorism?
Yes, it was really interesting to see the way that dissent was cracked down on in Paris, because I think it made it so much more clear that no matter what the conditions were, you cannot silence this movement, because there is too much at stake. You know, even the difference between 1.5 and 2 degrees, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people who would be displaced and affected by catastrophic climate change. So that was the pulse that you could feel, whether you were inside the credentialed blue zone in the UN negotiations, where almost 500 people on the last Wednesday of the talks risked having their badges revoked and their organizations were, you know, kicked out, to walk through the corridors where the diplomats were making decisions, to say, equity is a core issue, to say the inclusion of rights is critical, to say 1.5 needs to be our target, to say countries aren't doing enough, to say don't get lost in the weeds and don't argue and expect this tit for tat when the climate is too critical of an issue for the entire globe. You know, so you see this beautiful, vibrant, vocal movement willing to risk their badges all the way to the streets, where you see this red line action that, despite the protests being banned, the French officials actually changed their position because they knew there was no way to stop the organizing that was going on, to say these are the red lines that this climate agreement cannot cross. So it was this beautiful, vibrant, hard to articulate, but you can feel that this was the heartbeat of our movement, and it could not be silenced because of fears of terrorism. And this is all about the world we want to create, which is not a world based on fear. It's a world based on our vision and equity and being real about understanding our connection with the entire planet. And that was very much a vibrant part of all of the movement moments that happened in Paris.
We have been listening to Lindsay Allen, just back from the Paris Climate Talks. And Lindsay is the leader of the Rainforest Action Network. And you can keep up with that activism at RAN.org. Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Thank you, Alex.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.